and welcome to the Triathlon Coach Podcast. My name's Simon Ward and I'm your host for this weekly show where my goal is to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximize your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic athletes and coaching them to race at distances from sprint through to Ironman. Reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so if you enjoy today's conversation, I'd really appreciate it if you could drop into iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher and leave a rating and a review. And while you're there, please subscribe to our weekly episodes so that they can be downloaded straight into your phone or your iPad or wherever you choose to listen to them. And finally, to say thank you, I have a free gift for you. I've put together 25 of my top tips amassed from 30 years of racing and training and coaching in the sport. All you have to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she'll send it right out to you. Okay, now it's time to crack on with today's guest. Welcome back, everybody. This week, it's another solo cast as we continue our journey along the pathway of how to train for an iron distance or outlaw distance, depending on your denomination, triathlon. And having focused on swimming in the previous podcast a couple of weeks ago, I'm now going to focus on the bike and the run sections. If you didn't hear the swim podcast, then I will leave that link in the show notes at the end. But let's crack on because we have limited time and a lot to get through. So firstly, the bike. So the bike is the biggest contributor to both your race finish and your run performance. And you'll notice that I haven't used the word time there. Some people are aiming for something other than time. Some people are aiming to beat the cutoff. And while there is a time element involved in that, for them, finishing is the most important thing. Others are aiming to qualify and perhaps get to Kona or to some other world championship. And for them, it's on their position. And so time is sort of not completely, but somewhat irrelevant. Because you could have a PB time and still not be high enough up in the rankings to get the slot you need. So biking is the biggest contributor to your race finish and your run performance. You'll see what I mean about that as we get into the run. But let's just focus on some of the key points to do with cycling and some of the things that I think you need to bear in mind. So far, we have talked about a race plan that is around 20 weeks long. So 5 months out from your race day, you will be starting this program. And when you do get into race mode or race specific mode, then there are certain things that you want to do to change the aspect and approach of your training. The first thing I would suggest is that you need to dial in your aero position on your chosen race bike. You need to get a bike fit as soon as possible. Now, you may have had a bike fit in previous years. However, you probably have become aware that as you train, you get a little bit tighter, particularly when you're doing lots of triathlon training. It's common to get tighter around the hips. So your hip flexors are more tight, your glutes don't function as well as possible, your hamstrings maybe get a little tight, you might be tighter in the calves. And what this means is that it can have an impact on your bike position. You might also have tightened up around the shoulders and the neck. And even if you haven't, it's worth revisiting this just to make sure. So get a bike fit as soon as possible. And once you have got that position, then you need to ride in your aero position as much as possible, remembering that a race bike is not just for nice days and race days. So we don't take it out just when the sun is shining or just when we want to show off our new steed. We need to be riding this bike as much as possible so we get comfortable and efficient. And what's most important here is that you become efficient at your goal race pace. So that means that there's something else we need to focus on, is understanding what your race effort is going to be on the day of the event. An iron distance bike ride is 112 miles. You may have a race that you've chosen, let's say Outlaw or Kalmar or Copenhagen or Florida, where it's a relatively flat course and bike times are quite fast, and really it's about even pacing. Equally, you may be going to Ironman UK or to Ironman Wales or France or Switzerland, where there's a lot of climbing. It's likely that you'll be on your bike for a little longer, and therefore, because you'll be riding for longer, your average power for that ride may be slightly lower. Some of you may be only attempting to do this race and complete each section before the cutoff. As we said in the episode previously, the swim cutoff is 2 hours and 20 minutes after the start, or after you enter the water, if you're using a rolling start. The bike cutoff in most Ironman races is 10 and a half hours after your swim start. And again, that could be extended past the when the gun goes off if you're on a rolling start and it takes you 10 minutes to cross the line. But you've got 10 and a half hours. Now, obviously, if you are swimming right up to the limit there and it's taking you 2 hours and 20 to get out of the swim, that means you've got 8 hours and 10 minutes. If you're a great swimmer and you get out in an hour, then you've got 9 and a half hours. So I'll let you do the calculations on what this means for you in terms of cycling speed, but you're looking at around 14 to 15 miles an hour to beat the cutoff and get onto the run. If you're going faster than that and you're aiming for a PB or a qualification, then again, work out what sort of time you're after and what sort of effort it requires, what sort of average speed that is. Now, this is really difficult. If you've never raced over 112 miles before, with a swim before and a marathon afterwards, then you're going to be in the dark a little bit as to estimating what your finish time would be. Of course, you could go out and ride a similar course over 112 miles, a similar terrain, so the same amount of climbing, same sort of road surface, and work it out that way. If you've done a sportif that's 180k long, that will give you a rough idea, but maybe knock a bit of time off for the fatigue caused by the swim and the caution because you've got a run afterwards. Or you just aim to ride comfortably. Joe Friel did some calculations, a little document, which I will include in the show notes, called Intensity versus Bike Time. So, for instance, working and using power. If you anticipate that your ride will take you 6 hours, and he estimates that you should be riding at around somewhere between 67 and probably 72-73% for most age groupers, and amassing a score, a TSS score of around 290. If you're going to be out there for 6 hours and 10, you're probably going to be riding at 68%. If you're going to be out there for 5 hours and 20, so a flatter, faster course, or you're an Uber biker, then you might ride at 72 to 73%. So it's important that you have a handle on what that pacing is for race day, and then train accordingly. Most people do not train at race pace. They train below that, and then they do some above race pace efforts. But you do need to know that for race day. I would also say that it's important to be comfortable in the saddle. So the bike fit is essential, along with the right clothing, and be able to stay in the aero position, because being in this position is by far the best way to move through the air quickly. If you're sitting up, then no matter how fit you are, you're going to require more energy to move forwards. So be able to stay in the aero position for long periods of time. That means working on your mobility around the shoulders and the neck, the lower back and the hamstrings and the hips. You also need flexibility and stability around the shoulders, particularly if your shoulders are tightening up because they're unstable and you're having to tense those muscles, then you're creating tension which will carry over into the run and maybe hinder you in that. So work on those, and also just work on those long rides. Come on to that in a moment about how many you need to do, but you do need to be comfortable in the saddle for however long you think it's going to take you to ride 112 miles. Brick training is always important in any triathlon, and it's common for us all to think about running off the bike. But have you thought about swimming and then biking immediately afterwards? Because the changeover from being horizontal in the water and using your arms to sitting upright and using your legs is actually probably takes more adaptation than biking to running. Certainly, I've noticed even in an iron distance race when I'm not really running that hard or swimming that hard that it takes me about 10k to get my heart rate under control. So learning how to get into the right zone for the biking and also how to just relax those shoulders when you're in the aero position after you've been swimming for an hour to hour and a half to 2 hours. So think about swim bike bricks as well. It will require you to do a little bit more organisation because obviously you've got to take your bike with you to the lake or to the swimming pool to get this done in advance. All right, so other things you need to consider. I mentioned big rides. I hear a lot of people say they get bored when they ride on their own, so they like to ride with other people. I don't have a problem if you're riding with one or two other people of similar ability, but group rides, similar to those enjoyed by club cyclists, are not specific enough for you to get fully prepared for your iron distance event. You really need to be riding out there solo. In a group, you can, obviously, if you sit on the front all day and in your aero bars, that's fine. But if you're sitting behind other riders, they won't like it if you're in your aero bars. You'll be getting a drafting effect and you won't learn what it's like to sort of constantly ride into a wind on your own. If you're riding with one to two others, then again, take turns at being at the front. Have a pace line where you are 12 to 15 meters apart. So you also get good at judging that because that's important in the race if you don't want to get pinged for drafting. And take turns in doing your bit. I would also encourage you to seek out routes with a similar profile to your race. So for instance, Ironman Austria has about 1400 meters of climbing over the whole route. So that's about 300 meters of climbing, 200 to 300 meters of climbing. Well, no, it's not. It's 350 meters of climbing every 45 kilometers. But there are two big climbs now. Very difficult to simulate that in the UK, really. In Ironman Wales, where it's much easier for you to simulate this sort of riding, you've got around 2,000 meters of climbing in 180k. That's 500 meters per 45k. So if you want to simulate a similar profile and you've got a 90 kilometer ride, try to make sure that you've got 1,000 meters of climbing. That way you'll experience the same sort of fatigue in the legs that you're going to get on race day. So those are some of the key points that you should bear in mind throughout your bike training. Now what I'm going to do is hone in a little bit on how you are going to break that training down during those 20 weeks. So as part of the 20 weeks, and this will be the same for the run as well, we've got six blocks each of 3 weeks where you have two build and one recovery. And at the end of all of those six blocks, you have a 2 week taper. The first three blocks are polarized training and blocks 4 to 6 are threshold type training. So let's start with blocks 1 to 3. As you come out of your winter base plan, this will be a familiar intensity for you and a familiar intensity distribution. You'll be doing 90% of your training at or below 75 to 80% intensity. So it will feel relatively easy. And the longer the rides you do, the lower the intensity. So if you've got a 4 hour ride, you could probably ride at 65 to 70% and get a really good adaptation. If you're riding for 5 or 6 hours, then you could probably ride at 60 to 65% and get really good adaptation because it's about the accumulation of fatigue. So it's intensity times duration, not just intensity. At the other end of the spectrum, the polar opposite, if you like, 10% of your training will be greater than 90%. Now, I'm not suggesting that if you're an experienced athlete, this is going to help you build your VO2 max, although that is the intensity you'll be training at. I mean, there will be a little bit of that there, and it will help you to maintain your VO2 max velocity, but it will also help you to become much more economical, even on the bike. So efforts at intensities lower than this will just feel more comfortable. So I know you're going to be doing more than two bike sessions a week, but I would suggest that you have two sessions that you really focus on. One of those at the moment will be your high intensity intervals, and the other one will be your long ride. With the intervals, you'd want to build towards approximately 20 to 25 minutes of total work at this intensity. So that might be in a 1 hour session, and it might result in you doing something like 4 times 5 minutes at greater than 90% heart rate or around 110% FTP. Now you need to be fresh to do that. It's going to hurt, but it'll hurt more if you come into it tired. So make sure you space out your training accordingly. You may only be doing 4 times or 5 times, 3 minutes at the moment, but by extending the length of your intensity work, you will be moving yourself towards the duration of efforts needed in the next 3 blocks of training after this, so the threshold blocks. You'll see what I mean when we get there. So 20 to 25 minutes of total work, and within that then you'll be recovering at a really easy pace in the rest of the hour. Now your long ride, as I said earlier, the longer the ride, the lower intensity, approximately 65 to 70% intensity. If you try to ride harder over a longer distance, then you'll create fatigue, which will take 1 to 2 days to shift. And that might then impact on your ability to do those high intensity intervals, particularly when you add all the other training in. At this point, then, just slowly increase the duration. And about 20 weeks out, I don't really, personally, and particularly if you're limited for time, I'm not sure it's entirely necessary to be doing super long rides just yet. 4 to 4.5 hours is probably enough. Just get the consistency in and keep in mind that big sessions require longer recovery and therefore they have an impact on other workouts. So you would want to just keep those in mind, two key sessions. There will be other bike sessions within there. I'll come back onto those just at the end of this next bit. So in weeks 4 to 6, we're moving to a training intensity distribution, which focuses a little bit more on the sweet spot. So I'd say roughly 80% of your training will be around that 70 to 75% intensity, and 20% of your training will be at 80 to 90% intensity. So that's still harder, at least this 20% bit is still harder than you'll be expecting to race. Again, we have two key sessions, high intensity intervals, the long ride. The high intensity intervals now, as I said before, with the VO2 max stuff, you were moving towards 4 times 5 minutes. Stephen Seeler, his research where they looked at athletes doing 4x4 minutes or 4x8 minutes or 4x16 minutes found that 4x8 minutes was the best prescription. So you want to be attempting these at 90 to 100% of FTP. 100% of FTP is really hard for 8 minutes, especially to do that 4 times. And doing so could push you right into overload. And that's a tough workout. And I do worry and wonder these days whether if we're going to be racing at an intensity of 70% all day, how important it is to really be hammering ourselves so much, running the risk of overdoing it and not recovering, and whether you could go a little bit easier and still get that overload. But once a week, you'll be aiming to do 4 times 8 minutes at about 90 to 100% of your FTP. Or if you don't use FTP, then you are going to want to work at around 90%, 85 to 90% max heart rate. The other key session is your long ride. Again, 65 to 70% intensity as previously, but this time we are slowly increasing that duration. In the final few weeks, you would want to build towards being on the bike, either for the duration of time you think you'll be riding or 112 miles. But you only need to do this 2 or 3 times at max, and probably more for the confidence. If you're doing it every week, then you have that compromise about recovery. And if you remember that we are training for a triathlon, so you'll also be doing long swim and run sessions as well as the high intensity swim and run sessions. So there will be a fair bit of fatigue accumulating. One thing I did mention I would come back to, and this is to emphasize that in both phases, there will be sessions on top of these two key workouts, but you should be considering those as padding. And thus they are flexible in terms of the duration and the intensity is low to moderate. Again, remember, we want to get the mileage in, but we don't want to add to the fatigue created by these key sessions. Okay, that's it for the bike then. On the run's really important. I feel a lot of people think that the run is where they're going to make massive gains. And if you're a strong runner, you can make good positional gains, moving up through the field, running a steady pace and having confidence in your running. If you're a weaker runner, or your pacing is poor, that is, you go off too fast, then this is where your hard work on the bike can unravel very, very quickly. In the space of 5 kilometres, if you go from running to walking, you can lose 10 minutes, 15 minutes very, very easily. And if you start walking at, you know, halfway through the marathon, that leaves you 20 kilometres of sort of struggling and suffering, which isn't very pleasant. So you want to be very careful about your pacing in the early part of the run. Now, Ironman distance marathon running is not about fast running. A 3.5 hour marathon time in an event of this sort is more than respectable. I don't know the exact percentages, but it puts you in the top 10 to 20%, okay, of runners. Now, if you're wanting to qualify for Kona, you're clearly going to need to run a bit quicker than that in most age groups. But for the majority of people doing this distance of event, a 3.5 hour marathon is pretty swift as far as this type of event goes. But in terms of general running, it's not swift at all. We're talking about 8 minutes per mile or 5 minutes per kilometre. So most reasonably fit people can go out and run that pace when they're fresh. But you're not running it when you're fresh. You're running it at the end of 6, 7, 8, or 9 hours of activity. So the key to posting a good time here is not about how fast you are. It's about how little you slow down in the last 20 to 25 kilometres of the run. That's where the damage is done for weaker runners. And that's where the strong runners do their damage. And actually, on race day, much of this can be prevented through good strength and technique. So you've heard me say this before, you will not be let down by your engine. The bodywork will be what undoes your performance. So let's talk about some key points. Firstly, I want you to think about this. 70 to 80% of triathlon injuries are run-related and are lower limb and stem from poor technique, a lack of strength, and inappropriate volume. And by inappropriate volume, I mean increasing the distance you run each week too fast or doing too much for your body. So some people can cope with 5 hours of running a week. Some people can cope with only two. And if you're one of those and you push on to do 3 hours because you think you need to do it for your race, it's likely that you're going to get injured. Inappropriate volume for your body often means that you lack strength in certain muscles and that you have poor technique. So just a moment ago, I said it's about the body, not the engine. It's important that you spend a lot of time focusing on strength and mobility and stability around key running muscles. Now, following on from what I just said about those tri injuries, in swimming and cycling, you can train around an injury to a large extent. Once you get a running injury, it's very hard to do any meaningful running. So it's really, really important you stay healthy and injury-free. And again, we use that word compromise. If that means you have to back off some of your running or go a little easier, but be consistent, then that's what you have to do because consistency is the key to sustained improvement. So I would even advocate for those of you who are not used to it and haven't been doing it for a few years and know you can't do it without getting injured, don't go to the track. Don't do the hero workouts because they're the ones that are going to lead to you getting injured. It's also important to understand your goal race pace. And then be efficient at this. So we talked about the pace. A 3.5 hour marathon is 8 minutes per mile. A 4 hour 20 marathon, which is still pretty good, and particularly if you're aiming to finish and you have 17 hours to get from when you cross the start line to the finish. So even if you get off the bike after 10.5 hours of swimming and biking, you've still got 6.5 hours to get there. And you can do that with a combination of walking and running. In the meantime, and before then, understand what your goal race pace will be. Be realistic. If you've only ever run a 4 hour marathon when you're fresh, it's unlikely you're going to run a 4:10 marathon on race day. If you've run a 3.5 hour marathon when you're fresh, it's probably unlikely you're going to run a 3:45 on race day. It's more likely to be 4 or 4:15. And even then, it depends on how well you pace the bike. So understand what your goal race pace might be. Ironically, when I hear a lot of people saying that running at MAF pace, max aerobic function pace, that proposed by Phil Maffetone, is too slow, it's actually, when you look at the data, it is very, very close to that run pace for an Ironman distance event. So if we're talking about being efficient at race pace, then MAF pace is actually perfect for those of you who are doing this type of event. So get running at that. Learn to be efficient at it on race day. I'll tell you a little story about somebody I watched getting tested on a treadmill in a lab Running at 10 kilometres an hour, their running economy was average. Running at 12k an hour, their running economy was much better. So this, the economy is measured by the gas that they breathe in and out as they're exercising. So they're wearing one of those gas masks attached to a machine which measured expired gases in the breath. So they're more economical at 12k an hour, and then as the pace goes up and they get close to their threshold and they start struggling, their economy drops again. And what that tells me is everybody has a self-selected pace that they feel comfortable at, and it's usually faster than they're going to run the 26.2 miles at the end of their triathlon. So it's important to learn to be nice and efficient at easy paces. Now, at the opposite end of the spectrum, we have intervals. And I know a lot of people who want to run hard, fast intervals because they think that hard, fast intervals are going to help them get fit. You would be correct on that last assumption. Hard, fast intervals will help you to get fit. And they're perfect if you're running a 10K, if you're doing a track race, if you're doing a shorter distance triathlon. The question I would ask you, and what I ask myself as a coach, is how hard or fast do you need to run? If your goal is to run a 3:30 marathon in this iron distance event, that's 8 minutes per mile, 5 minutes per kilometre. Do you need to run intervals, 400 intervals at the track at 6 minutes per mile? I don't think so. So think hard about what you're trying to achieve. I would actually state quite categorically that for most people doing this distance of event, just running easily, as in marathon pace, so 70% of max heart rate, and doing that for the duration of this 5 month program will actually help you to achieve a really good finish on race day. And I particularly do not think it's necessary to push yourself to exhaustion. Now, yes, there will be people listening to this who say, well, I want to qualify for Kona, or I want to do this or that or the other. I want to go sub 10 hours. And yes, you will need to do that. But even then, if you're aiming to run a 3 hour marathon, which is pretty rapid for age group long distance triathletes, that's 7 minutes per mile, maybe just a touch under. 7 minutes per mile. So think about that. If you're doing track intervals that are having you running at 5:30 per mile, is that really what you need? Do you need to run fast over short distances, or do you need to run more efficiently over long distances? We talked earlier on about brick sessions and swimming and biking together. Clearly, we do need to do some running off the bike. And I would suggest that you do this regularly, at least once a week. Maybe twice a week. And I have two strategies that I use with athletes. You could actually bring three in there. On a weekend, I like to have a bike and a run. Sometimes I do the standard thing and I do a long bike. So 4, 5 or 6 hours. And I have the athlete then get off and run for 20 to 30 minutes at an easy pace, just so they get the feeling of their legs coming back to them. They do feel a bit wooden to start with. The alternative to that one, and which is less common, is to do a short but much harder bike. So you could bring your intervals for the week forward to a Sunday and then follow that with a longer run. So now you're getting a chance to feel like, experience what it feels like to do a long run on tired legs. But also remember that when you do these combinations, they're going to promote fatigue, and fatigue takes longer to recover from, and you don't necessarily want to impact on other sessions that you've got in the following week. I definitely wouldn't be doing a 4 to 5 hour ride followed by a 2 hour run. That would just lead too much fatigue. You might end up getting injured. If you want to do a long run after a relatively long bike, just pencil in a medium distance triathlon and do that one. For other people, and I know that this sort of raises a few shackles among some triathletes, but I would definitely consider a run-walk strategy. There's a guy called Jeff Galloway in the States. I will put his details in the show notes. I'm actually trying to get him on a podcast, but we haven't done yet. But I will share some of his stuff, because Jeff Galloway is a big advocate of walk-run, and he has got plenty of examples of people who've run sub 3:30 for marathons by doing intervals of, say, 8 minutes running and 2 minutes of walking, and been able to sustain that pace throughout. What happens with a lot of athletes is that they will run until their body gives up the ghost. And remember, it's the body that gives up the ghost, not the engine. The hip flexors become too tired. Their calf muscles are weak. They can't pick the feet up, so they end up doing the Iron Man shuffle. Then their head starts to go. They start feeling sorry for themselves, and they end up walking. And actually, a run-walk strategy from the off can end up with you getting to the finish line far more quickly than if you tried to run until you couldn't run and then you shuffled until you got to the line. So please do think about that. Bury the ego for a little bit and take the approach that's going to get you to the finish line most efficiently and in the fastest time. Let's talk about some running then. Some specifics. So again, we've got 20 weeks and we're basing it on the 20 weeks until race day. It's six blocks of 3 weeks, two build, one recovery, 2 week taper at the end. First three blocks are polarized. Second three blocks of threshold. The polarized work, again, exactly the same as the bike. 90% of training, below around 75% of intensity. Remember that longer runs equals lower intensity. You could even get away with something like a long run walk. I know plenty of athletes who walk around the Yorkshire Dales and run on the downhills and on the flat and walk uphill and get very, very fit doing that. 10% of training over 90%. However, I would, and in this, I think it's still okay to run fast because you're building economy. We're not doing very much. We could probably get away with a little bit less than on the bike. So 15 to 20 minutes of work, maybe as a fartlek or using the BLAT 30-30 protocol where you're doing 3 to 5K pace strides for 30 seconds and a 30 second rest. And you might do 20 to 25 of those. So it builds economy without a great deal of fatigue. I'd also include a long run as your key session. Again, keeping the intensity pretty low, slowly increasing duration, but no need at this stage to be doing super long runs. 1.5, maybe 2 hours max, with a bit of walking built in. It's probably enough. Again, reminding you that big sessions require longer recovery. In order to maybe increase your potential for recovery, what about the idea of a double or triple run day? So instead of doing a 2 hour run, you break it up as 2 1 hour runs. Or you even do 40 minutes in the morning, 40 minutes at lunchtime, 40 minutes in the evening. All possible. Running's about consistency and good form. Once you get into the threshold training part, so that's starting with 11 weeks out and going to 2 weeks out before you start taper. Again, the training intensity distribution, TID, goes to 80% below around 70 75%, 20% of it at 80 to 90%. Two key sessions a week. Your high intensity intervals probably aren't that high intensity. I definitely don't think with running it's necessary to run at 10K pace or 5K pace for those 4 times 8 minutes. I'd be focusing on the bottom end of the sweet spot at probably half marathon pace and thinking about the fatigue that generates as well if you were to run for harder or longer. The long run, yes, sure, build up the duration now, but again, think about topping it out at 2.5 hours. I'll come back to that in a moment. Remember that there are other runs and those runs are just padding. They're flexible in terms of duration as with the bike. But with the run, more important to avoid developing too much fatigue, keeping those lower limbs in good shape. Now there's a big debate. There was an article I did in 220 magazine, which they republish every now and again. And they're always tweeting about myself and Andy Blow from Precision Hydration, discussing whether or not it's necessary to run long each week. I still don't think it is. I think you need to run long occasionally. I think it's much more important to be consistent with your run, particularly if you're a heavier runner, you're an older runner, or you have a history of injuries. For those more accomplished, younger, lighter runners, sure, run a few more miles and run a bit longer on a more regular basis. But for the majority of triathletes, I would question whether that is a better policy than just being consistent. So get 3 hours a week in, but do it in 3 1-hour runs and then put the occasional longer run in. Longer runs build confidence, but how many do you need to do to get that confidence? Is it one? Is it two? Is it 10? Is it 10? If you're going to do 10, why not do 20? So again, I remind you to consider risk versus reward. Confidence builds endurance, but longer recovery and impact on sessions in the next few days. And there's an increased injury risk when you run tired. In order to minimize this injury risk, I would really, really strongly emphasize that you think of some other aspects to your training. Certainly with running, I would not ignore mobility or strength work. You don't need to do heavy lifting, particularly during this phase, but I would definitely be doing lots of calf raises. I would definitely be doing lots of hip flexor work. I would definitely be doing some good core work, and I would definitely add in 10 minutes of run drills and technique before I start to get that good hamstring involvement and the pickup of the heels to avoid shuffling. Remember, it's not about driving in front of your body, it's about picking up behind your body. You watch all the good runners have a good heel lift. And I emphasize again on race day, it will not be about your engine, which is the limiting factor. It will be about the body. During this 20-week period, you will be slowly increasing your weekly training volume. Yes, there is a recovery week built in on every third week. So at the end of every three-week block, the last week is a recovery week. However, if you're building in more training, then you need more recovery. So as you find time to do an extra hour of training with each week or with each cycle, then you must find time to get in an extra hour of recovery. Please do not start compromising sleep to add in more training, because that's just going to push you down towards a disaster. And training on its own without extra recovery will not actually make you fitter. Your progress will be limited. Equally, it's important to listen to your body. If you've got a program from your coach, or you've bought one, or you're following the Don Fink program, that's great. But just because it's on the program doesn't mean you have to do the training. Listen to your body. Fatigue is part of a journey towards an event of this sort, but you should not feel tired and sore all the time. If you do start to feel like this, then it's important to take some easy days or some rest days. Just be compassionate and listen to your body. You want to get to the race in good shape. I also hear people saying, oh, I wish this race was over. You know, you don't want to be feeling like that. Training for an iron distance race is exciting. Enjoy the whole thing. There's another thing we haven't talked about, and that might come in another podcast, but I did just want to touch on it here because I know a lot of you will have a race weight target, and there is nothing wrong with that. What I would caution against is the principle of cutting your calories while you're training hard. This can just lead to a bad outcome. You'll be compromising your immune system, and that will leave you more at risk of getting ill, and then you won't be doing any training. If you eat clean, then the volume of training you're doing will lead to slow, steady weight loss. And that is by far my preferred method of achieving that weight. If you're 10 kilos overweight going into this, then you know you really ought to be looking at what you were doing before now and why you got into that state. But please don't be trying to lose 10 kilos. That's half a kilo a week. It's an awful lot of weight to lose when you need to be recovering. And the thing about nutrition is there are no secrets. There's not an Ironman outlaw way of eating. You know, it doesn't matter what eating philosophy you follow, whether it's paleo or vegan or, you know, low carb, high fat, whatever. Just eat clean, nutrient-dense foods. The simplest way actually to lose weight is to cut out those refined sugars and processed carbs. Those are calories that don't really contribute to recovery. I mean, of course, if you've done a really hard glycogen depleting session, then simple sugars and carbs can help you to recover. But there are still some carbs that are better than others. The problem, and alcohol as well, are what I'd call empty calories. So if you really want to help yourself drop some weight, cut out those. The other benefit from this is that refined sugars and processed carbs can in some cases lead to inflammation in the muscles and the joints, which may make your legs feel more sore and which may lead to those chronic connective tissue injuries that we tend to get. Those are things like Achilles tendonitis and patellofemoral issues around the knee. So think about your nutrition and how this might not just be impacting on your recovery from training and on your weight, but also contributing to injury. Now, having said that about refined sugars, I do think you need to practice with your chosen race day nutrition. So it's worth doing that while you're out training to make sure that you can cope with that type of intake. I hear people talking about making their own food for race day, and that's great. But often the commercially available products pack lots of calories into a smaller size and are conveniently wrapped, whereas home-cooked food tends to occupy a greater volume and therefore it's more difficult to carry around on race day. So that's something to bear in mind. The other thing I would just get you to think about is you could do a six-hour ride and use your race nutrition and feel great, but that doesn't really simulate 10 hours plus of triathlon racing under stress. And by stress, I'm talking about the nerves and associated stress that comes with race day. And if you don't know what I'm talking about here, think about If you go out and just swim with your mates in the morning and then go out and ride for 2 or 3 hours and then go and run, you probably get up and feel nice and relaxed. If I suddenly said there was a race and there was lots of people doing the same thing at the same time, you would start to have a runny tummy and feel a bit nervous. And that then plays havoc with your gut, and that can have an impact on the way in which your body digests that sports nutrition. So the only real way to make sure that your race day nutrition works is to simulate it in some practice race beforehand. And I'm not suggesting you do an Ironman in the lead up to your Outlaw or the other way around. What I'm suggesting is that you try this over a period of time to see what works. One thing you can do which might help is to do some race simulation days. So that is putting 3 workouts in the same day. So there are various combinations here. There are 3 obvious ones. You can swim first, and then, as I mentioned earlier, you can bike straight afterwards and then run a bit later in the day. Or you can swim early in the morning, get home, have your breakfast, and then go out on the bike and do a run. Or you can swim early in the morning, get home, have your breakfast, go out a couple of hours later to bike, and then get home and a couple of hours later go out and run. So there's 3 options. The 4th option is to do a race. Okay, so replace a race simulation day. But if you are going to do a race, I'm not keen on the idea of just doing that race and aiming for a PB. And if you don't do that PB, then you're disappointed. The race that you're going to do in the lead up to your key race is helping you to prepare for that key race. And so ideally, you'd want to learn something about one aspect of that race, how you react under pressure in the swim with lots of people around you, how well you can pace it on the bike so that you can have a good run, how well your nutrition works out. Can you hold an aero position for 2.5 hours in a half iron distance event and then know that you can extend that out for the X number of hours in a longer race? Now, while we're talking about combining the bike and the run, I think I've mentioned this before, but as we're speaking about these 2 disciplines specifically here, it won't harm to mention it again. Over the years, as a coach, I've heard, and to be quite honest, I've probably done this myself as an athlete, but I've heard athletes sort of say 2 types of statements after a race. The first one is this. The athlete comes back in. They think that they have had a great bike. They think they nailed it. So they'll say, yeah, I had a great bike, but I really struggled on the run. The second statement is where the athlete says, yeah, I took it real easy on the bike. I had a great run. Now, there might be a clue in there that going a little easier on the bike allows you to run the run that you really think you can have. If you go at the pace you think you can sustain on the bike, it almost always ends up in you having a less than optimal run. And generally, the best combination in terms of mastering this event is going slightly easier on the bike and getting the run that you think you deserve. Because remember, you've got to ration energy out across the 5 or 6 or 7 hours of the bike and the 4 or 5 hours of the run, not just the run or the bike. You've got to spread the information out over 2. If you rob Peter to pay Paul, you'll be struggling later on. So bear that in mind, unless you've got the experience of having done 10 races and you know what pacing combination works. Okay, some final thoughts. Training for your Ironman distance or Outlaw distance event is a journey. I think it's important to embrace the training, the 20 weeks that lead up to that race day, as much as it is. In fact, I can remember back to most of the races I've done that I've enjoyed the training as much, if not better, than I have on race day. Of course, on race day, you get the excitement and the satisfaction and the crossing the finish line and getting that medal you've dreamed of for ages. But the 20 weeks spent swimming with my mates, you know, going out on the long bike rides, doing the track sessions, sharing stories and sharing sort of what we thought were failures at the time, and helping each other through, was really good fun. And when I look back on it, that's the bit I've enjoyed over the last 25 years. Race times are important. I know that. I know an awful lot of you are motivated only by the time you get that you see a sub 12 hour time as being respectable and a 12 hour something time as not being as respectable. But please do not ignore the process. Sometimes you can get far more enjoyment out of a race by mastering each discipline. And there are so many things that you can get wrong, so many things to try and get right on race day in each of the disciplines and in the bits leading up to it and in transition, etc. That if you can master all of those on the same day, you'll have so much more enjoyment than you will just by looking at that clock. And in fact, if that clock wasn't at the finish line, how else would you decide where the it had been an enjoyable experience. I mentioned this earlier, but I'll emphasise it again. Leading up to race day, I think you should be really excited about your upcoming event. I've heard people saying that they just can't wait to get it over with, that they're sick of all the training, and that usually tells me that they've probably overdone it. They're not excited anymore. It's a bit of a chore, and there's a lot of research around to show that loss of motivation is a primary indicator of under-recovery. So look at the total load in your life as well as external stresses. Okay, so that's it for today. We've covered the swim, the bike, and the run now. I've got just one subject or two subjects left to cover in the final episode in this series, and that is tapering and your race day strategy, and also post-race blues. What do you do in the few weeks after you've finished? So have fun with your training. Take care of your body. Enjoy what you're doing. And I will see you next week for the final installment. Bye for now. That's a wrap for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the conversation. And I hope you learned at least one thing. If this is the first time you've listened in, please go back and take a listen to some of our previous guests, and I can guarantee they will be just as good as the one you've just heard. If you've been a regular listener, then thank you for being a part of this journey with me so far. Finally, I'd like to take just a few seconds to tell you about my SWOT Inner Circle program. In the last few years, I spent an awful lot of time creating training programs and resources to help you train and race at whatever triathlon distance you choose, and for some of the events outside of triathlon like aquabike, duathlon, and swim run events. As a SWOT member, you get access to all of these plans for 12 months of the year, and on top of that we provide guidance on strength and conditioning, nutrition, plus a whole host of other supportive activities which help you to train, recover and race better. We also have a really friendly Facebook community. It's an exclusive Facebook page for SWOT members only, and there are over 150 of them already. If you join, you'll be able to get access to that page, and you'll be able to ask for help, and our members are all too happy to provide guidance and advice based on their experiences. I'll also be there to help you find solutions to your training problems, and all you have to do is tag me in the Facebook page in one of your posts, or you can book a 15-minute phone call should you need one. If you'd like more information, or if you're ready to press the button and join the SWOT Inner Circle, just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send you all of the details. So that's all for this week. Hopefully I'll see you again next week, same time, same place, with a different guest.